And the session is Stories to Live By, and our story today is called The Wings of the Wind. And I'm reading from a book on fables by a woman by the name of Vara Kamin, who actually lives in the Minneapolis area. And this is her first book of fables that has come out. She's done a variety of writing, but she's gotten into fables and uses them for a variety of things with different groups that she works with. And
sorry.
So the story. Let's see. I don't know if anybody. We are all new today or not. Maybe some overlap here, but. Yesterday we did a story about the name of the book, actually, The Gold Key in the Mahogany Box, about discovering, when we discovered the gold key, that the key in the box disappeared and what people had been, the souls had been searching for was a hidden treasure, and the hidden treasure was within their own huts. Stories. There are stories everywhere. Stories around every rock and corner at Holden. Every time you meet somebody, we want to find out more about who people are and hear their stories, because it gives us some sense of understanding of who the person is. It helps us to make connection. It helps us enrich our own lives and learn something about ourselves. So we listen to stories for pure pleasure, or to reflect, self-reflection, and sometimes to find some meaning, some new meaning or something deeper, some meaning that connects with the ordinary events in our own life. Now, the meaning isn't always obvious, and particularly in fables, I think, the meaning is more elusive. So you have to listen and hear and see what is going on within the fable. And what it's going to be different for each one of you, because each of us bring our own experiences, our own dreams and hopes and understandings, our own feelings to the story. So what we get out of it is going to be different. And that's what we hope for here. So I think we'll start out and we'll use the same format as we did yesterday. To begin with, we'll do some short relaxation and just centering, focusing on the breath, so that we move into our own space so we can hear the story differently. So we leave all the distractions and whatever we've been involved with this morning or thinking about what we're going to do next out there and just be in the space for this hour. Come on in and join us. You need to sit over here. Okay. So if you'll get comfortable in your chair. Oh, wait a moment here.
I'm sorry. I went to the wrong place.
just pull up the chair and join us.
Then I had to figure out why I had to leave. Oops.
Boy, you'll just have...
We're meditating.
I can tell. You arrived just in time. We're just going to begin. And you'll just have a little more baggage to leave out there.
I always do.
So if you get comfortable in your chairs, and it helps to close your eyes, and just be in that space where you are present to yourself, and begin to take some deep breaths, breathing in and breathing out, breathing in and breathing out, breathing in that wonderful, life-giving oxygen. It keeps us connected to all
that we are inside, as well as keeps us connected to the external world. So focus on your breath and just be there with your breath for a few moments and experience the sense of relaxation and centering, letting go of any anxieties, tension, baggage you brought in today. Just leave it by the door and pick it up later. Just focus on the breathing. And when you are ready, open your eyes and be present in this time and space. Once upon a time, long, long ago, before the first baby on earth was ever born, the people of the world lived in the sky. And when the sky became as crowded as the planet is today, a new land formed beneath the sea. It was here, underneath the rushing waters, that a tiny town made of stars was found. This town, created by the states that were once united and the countries that were once divided, had no ruler. Each person was his own master. Divergent cultures, bound by ancient traditions, stood together while all the land's resources were shared. When the spoken word was not understood, a smile became the universal language. The tears of one always touched the heart of another, while joy rained from the clouds. In this town, it wasn't silk or satin, but rather kindness and compassion that showed a well-dressed person. And whether one traveled alone or with another on an ox's back, in a carriage, or in a cart, it mattered not. It was how people lived their lives that provided comfort, not the chair upon which they sat or the home in which they resided. Just before the light of the day vanished, all the townspeople put their chores to bed. In this tiny town, mankind's labors stayed with the light, while rest and recreation ruled the night. Pangs of hunger were never felt, and no one dined alone. While some folks ate with their fingers and others ate with a spoon, neither the young nor the old ever went without food.
Not long after the evening meal, everyone sat by the firelight that forever burned in the middle of town. Here, around the brightly colored flames, stories from the old world were told in words that all could hear. When the world made its home in the sky, many of those who lived upon the orb lost their way in life. Some said it was the city lights burning long into the night that stole mankind's sight. Others said it was the lack of light from within that blinded the mind and smothered the hearts of all. As the story is told, mankind never slept. While struggling in the stillness of each night's slumber, the world's people tossed and turned as if shipwrecked at sea. And when they sank to the depths of their own desires, mankind's dreams died a lonesome death. For centuries, the people of that world constantly prepared for war. But no weapon ever designed could defend against the enemy that lay hidden deep within. Savage beasts of anger, buried by strong wills and passion, preyed upon the pain buried in the hearts of men and women. Babies were born without laughter and were filled with sorrow. From one generation to the next, these sad souls suffered through life without smiles. Greed ravaged the meadows and blasted the mountains, while desperation and despair polluted the air. Structures of steel grew taller than the trees, leaving mankind to nibble on the leftover scraps of nature's land. World peace insidiously disappeared, and all that was familiar was gone forever. The sun no longer shone below, but shed its rays behind a dark black haze. The stars, having lost their glimmering cosmic design, slowly slipped from the sky. When the four seasons became one on this planet that spread across the heavens, all but a few burned in the heat of the fire. It soon became known that mankind was the arsonist who set the flames of death upon himself throughout the world. For those who survived, life soon became less of a struggle. The burns on mankind's body were soothed with a salve of tears from those who perished in the fire. Although small pockets of sorrow still lingered deep within, a newfound freedom returned mankind's power. Since jet propulsion had come to an end, mankind was forced to fly once again upon the wings of the wind. By the force of nature's persistent commands, mankind's wings carried them far, far away from the crusted vestige of the earth to the place beneath the sea, which is now the land. The firelight around which the town folk sit was built by the wind that carried the flames to the center of town. And it is this flame that burns on endlessly through the light of day and the dark of night, that warms the world from the beginning, before dawn, to the end, when the last breath is drawn. The end. And what I'd like you to do is just to take a little time and be in your own space with whatever images,
ideas, thoughts, reflections the story evokes for you, and do some writing or some drawing or just sitting and reflecting on it, whatever works best for you. And then we'll take some time for some sharing. Here's some pencils and...
circles. And are we all little molecules just part of life? Like little tiny images put together in our house sometimes. I wonder if we make ourselves too important. When will we learn to stop wandering around and start wandering within?
Whoa.
So that's
circle. Kirsten, I hope you've put the tape back on here.
Thank you, Lorsky.
Say that last one again.
When will we learn to stop wandering around and start wandering within? To stop wandering around and start wandering within. Holden helps you do that.
That's beautiful. And the images that you have too, show us again, because that's...
First one was just a simple circle. I just kept hearing going around and around, you know? And then I started getting more, and then I started thinking about, well, but if every part of it, maybe. And I started thinking about all of us, as a muck. And then I started thinking about, where are we running? And you know, you never catch up, so maybe you ought to stop going from here to there and start being within that which you are. And stop, you know, trying to adorn and fix and, you know, other outside.
So starting at a different place than really from within out, rather than out here in the mountains. You have come to the center. That's beautiful. What about others? Who else has something that they want to share about their image? What are they doing?
You've got these elementary school teachers.
Yeah,
they deal with images all the time.
As you were reading, I was thinking one particular phrase stuck out. I don't know why, out of the whole thing. And I just think that that's a lot of what my job is and what I'm about. And I really liked it. It just, it stuck there, and then it kept hovering there as you finished on. And I know these weren't the words, but this was kind of the gist. Is that the burdens of humankind were softened by the tears of humanity. And I just really liked that.
Do you want to say more
about it? Do I want to say more about it? I see so many fragmented lives, like the kids that I deal with on a daily basis come to me. I'm an eighth grade dean. Come to me with such pain. And sometimes I cry with them, and sometimes I bring other kids in to cry with them. And their burns really are healed by either literal tears or figurative tears of compassion. And I think that the more that we can connect others, it just helps them a lot.
So the healing from the compassion and the tears that are shared, that reach
two others mm-hmm. in their painting and in their movie. Mm-hmm. That's easy. Mm-hmm.
So it's like we cause the pain, but we also can help the hurt. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the paradox.
We're both.
Yes, we're both.
Mm-hmm. That's good you did that, though.
Yeah, that really helps me.
And helping.
I drew something, but I didn't know why I drew it. You just told me why I did it.
She told me.
No kidding. Just,
How did that... Do you want to share that?
Sure. a lot going on here. I just went with my gut level. And, of course, the first part of your story here, mm-hmm. I pictured what was happening. And practically the last thing I put in were those tears. Oh. And the fact that the same people who were causing the flame that caused the destruction were also causing the tears, providing the tears to free the few. This is supposed to be few, and this is supposed to be many. Didn't I hear you say the many uh-huh. who would survive uh-huh. on the wings of the wind to, I guess it was a different place, but it was under the water. But the different place was still a planet, uh-huh. and this was coming. This is the refracted. The light came from the wind, and refracted into the surviving people, giving them the light. Until that is, that's kind of how lots there.
Oh,
that's
very involved.
Yes. I know. I'm very complicated.
it's a beautiful imaging of the story.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it neat to think that I just went did that, but you. Revealed to me how that helped in the imagery of help. These people did help these, like the Jews. I'm sorry, Vern's Bible studies this morning is still affecting what I'm doing right now. And that the Jews, that could even be the Jews, except I don't want to be oppressing them. Mm-hmm. And their tears have helped.
It helped heal. Mm-hmm. Helped heal. Mm-hmm.
Or, you just keep going, I guess.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. But the idea that both the pain and the suffering mm-hmm. that causes can also be the healing process. Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to be peaceful. And I love water, and it's been healing for me. So that could be healing, too. Yeah.
It looks very peaceful mm-hmm. and healing.
I forgot to put the fish in.
Maybe they haven't come yet.
That's right. First came the
Well, what is interesting in this is that these stories can touch a part of our unconscious or subconscious that we were not even aware of. Like you put in those tears and you didn't consciously put them in for a particular reason, but they came there. And then it's revealed by somebody else.
That's
right.
Neat.
But your subconscious was aware that
yes,
somehow.
Yeah, I connected to that
to
right
there.
Away.
Mm-hmm. It can be very powerful. Mm. Other thoughts? People.
I went with the same two circle, but I don't have as much explanation as she does.
Well, I didn't at the time.
Mine, the tree is life. And then it's a transition from one to the other, mm-hmm. which to the story.
You're going to just turn it around and show Carol back there.
Mm-hmm. Great circles.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
They are.
They're, you know, I do know I picked color so it changed hue as it came uh-huh. out, uh-huh. and then fed into that, and
came
out of here also.
Right.
I pictured it more going back into this one. The light here is just a transition as we're going through,
mm-hmm.
but there's not really a beginning and end.
No, there is that continuity there, but you get a sense of something quite different.
And his is like, you know, the outer going into the inner circle like yours was.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, the energy up there is really quite alive. You get the sense that there's a kind of diminishment of energy in the other.
There seems to be a focus in where that one is headed, where the other one doesn't have a direct center. Perhaps now I know this is where I need to be. As you move through life. Whether or not you're there or not doesn't make any difference, but there's a focal point in there.
Oh, I think this is great to see the different images that people come out with.
I'm apparently a sequential thinker because this kind of illustrates what I saw in the story, but without the center, because I saw no clear, no smooth transition from one world to the other, and I thought, I must have missed something. I went back and I read the story, and there is not a smooth transition. And so the question was raised in my mind, what happened? Why? She doesn't explain in any way what happened here between when they were sharing in common and sitting around the firelight telling the stories of old, and then suddenly they're preparing for war and they're not sleeping and all of that. And I said, wait a minute, there's something missing here. What happened? There's something missing between what she was describing in one side and what seemed in the story to suddenly happen. And there wasn't enough time for me to work that through, so I'm still left with that feeling. No, wait a minute, there's something missing there.
I mentally made that when you read it, and I was drifting a little bit back to Vern, too, because he got me thinking this morning, too. And then when I came back, we were back into, like you say, the war, and I thought, oh, I missed what happened there.
Well, that's interesting. Did you hear that this new land were preparing for war, or did you hear it as part of the stories from the old world?
What it said is, while the people are living, let's see, how did it say it? The sentence itself to me did not even make sense when I reread it. The people who are living in the new the sentence that I'm referring to? Or
The people for centuries, the people of the world.
When the world made its home in the sky, many of those who lived upon the orb lost their way in life. And to me, I thought she was talking about the people living on the orb all this time, about sharing in common and all of that, that they had come to live on the orb because in the sky there was no longer the room and so on. And now suddenly she has a sentence about when the people who lived in the sky, whatever that was, than the people on the orb, and to me, that wasn't how I had picked up on the story at all. So,
did others pick up on it that way?
I think she might have hit upon something being just that kind of a learner, though, because sometimes they think random abstract people just make that logical leap. Like, it's fuzzy, well, here I am. Whereas the sequential people go, wait a minute, I need
something's
to get
missing.
Here.
Something more concrete too.
I can see all of these things that you're talking about. They were there in the story, and I can see those, but as yet my mind still is troubled by there was something wrong. There was no smooth transition here, and so I can't put it all together. While I can see bits and pieces that are being shared here.
But did you see the war and the disintegration as being part of the second group of people, or did you see it as the stories that the people in the new land under the sea were telling from their remembrance of life in the sky, on the sky planet?
Well, that was part of the stories. No, I didn't see it in that way at all.
Did other people hear it as the stories that they were telling of the old world?
Obviously, my background filled in the gaps that I wanted filled in. And I didn't get realistic at all, except for the the words that helped me. If I was going to illustrate something, there were some words that I could immediately put down, but I had to fill in, just like your tree, and I heard wings of wind. Okay, it has to come from this breath.
The spirit.
And then, yeah, and then I thought, oh, well, of course that's my background, the breath of life from Christ, and so forth. So I think my imagination just went wild, which I don't know whether that's her intent. Not that we need to know her intent.
Yes.
Intent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as you say, if you're a more kind of intuitive, abstract, you can kind of make these leaps that you don't need to have as many of the pieces there to kind of bridge for you. And that's just, we're different. Mm-hmm. We're different how we approach.
And there's no right or wrong.
No, there isn't. Mm-hmm. There isn't.
Really?
Would you like to support him? He's waiting for the answer.
I know. He's We would invite you to be the next to talk about what happened.
Well, can you stand primitive art?
I love primitive
art. An engineering thought. I look at the story in a little different manner, maybe. I look at this creation or the beginning of a day by just putting it together like this.
Oh.
And then it just goes around.
So it becomes a...
So the day may deteriorate like life does sometimes, but you can kind of look at it as a refocusing, that portion of the lens that refocuses, and there's the bright spot on the other side, which goes back to the beginning of the next day.
So you put it all within the time frame of a day.
And well, it can be a day or a day and eons or whatever.
Right, right. One day is like 1,000 years or whatever. So the
good.
That's the correct answer you said?
Ones are more other engineers, but it's the engineering answer.
And few words said at all.
So the chaos and all that can develop within the day then is refracted into.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the tragedies and the resurrections each day of life.
That bring us back to a new starting point, a new kind of chance for rebirthing and starting again, a new beginning.
Gotta have hope or something.
I like your idea of the focusing and the refracting. I heard a guy say once, you know, if you consider yourself kind of a camera and you are the lens, and if that what you're looking at is so upsetting and you don't have any control over it, and not that you're going to forget about it, there may be a time at which you can't intervene or do something, but you don't need to live in a constant upsetness. Refocus. Get your energies back so that you can maybe do more.
You know, I thought about that. Yep.
Time to refocus. So you just drained of this energy, not being able to be in charge of your own shot.
And yet what so often happens, as this story illustrates, I think, how we continue to do more of the same rather than the refocusing and stepping back and thinking that we have some other choices. We just continue to control and add more and fill spaces, fill time and the pace, and rather than refocusing and asking some other questions, making some other choices.
I didn't do my little simple illustration here. I just chose really very gentle, pleasant colors to live with. So I was working more with the colors as a feeling, but it's sort of where I am right now in Holden, and then we can kind of get the idea of Holden, the mountains here. Because I've been here over 3 weeks, and I've just got a couple more days here. So the only part of the story that I've kind of focused on is on wings of the wind. And this is me on these wings of the wind. And the place I'm at now in centering myself before the meditation, or you know, sort of meditation, is that my spirit or the spirit of the creator or the God is imaged here by just this cycle of this force, this energy of force or energy, rather than any other, you know, just kind of abstract energy. And the wings of the wind is kind of pushing me up towards this energy that I feel here. And you know, I was thinking about putting down through here some of these destructive things you were talking about. And I decided that'll come soon enough. When I'm
And
there wasn't a space over here to put those, but I just stopped at that point because. I didn't need that, and I thought, you know, it just began to look too much like heaven and hell. So I just left that out.
Refocused.
Very good. Good. Oh, this is wonderful. It's such diverse kinds of ways of thinking and imaging and our imaginative processes and our experiences. Mm-hmm. Others want to share? and it's okay if you don't want to.
I kind of in love with hers. When you talked about the world in the beginning, it's really kind of weird, but in the beginning when the floating figures were around it, and I kind of focused on what it would feel like to be floating without the world is formed here, but it wasn't when you first started reading them. But I just thought, and then I thought of it as us not really being formed yet either.
Oh,
but I don't know.
as human beings, we're in a constant process,
and I didn't. And I thought about making it starting in one place and ending in another, but I don't know. It just kind of circled around, and I guess as the world is formed, we became more holistic or whatever as people too. Maybe that's how I saw the ending of the story as being that way. I don't know. Kind of abstract.
So as the world was formed and we began to be in community more, then we also took more form.
The formation of our spirit.
I like that.
Different than anybody else.
Well, but it's your story. It's your experience from this, and that's what's important, not that somebody else's. All of this out of a simple story. Anyone else want to share? We're gonna run out of
time. I've been feeling today, you know, with Vern's thing, and just, I guess, the whole experience that we're hearing in the last 2 days, that the human community is blowing it so badly. So I went back to one of my own stories. It's, I'm embarrassed reading because it's one of the times when I was a kid that I didn't blow it. And, you know, I think it was a lot like what you were talking about, refocusing. And my friends here have heard the story a couple times before, probably anyhow, whether they remember it or not. And I'm always embarrassed about reading personal stories, but since it's not that long, I might as well read it, right? It'll be plenty short.
Sure.
This story probably takes place in the summer of 1957. I was supposed to be home for lunch by noon. It was an order that my mom, with 10 kids, expected to be obeyed. Punishment was doled out liberally by the use of a spanking stick. None of us would willingly disobey. The stick hurt too much. My friend Mikey Dunn, 4 years old, and I, 5 years old, walked down the street to the junk yard where we would play in junk cars. It stood in the field less than 2 blocks away on the edge of a cornfield in Caledonia, Minnesota. We'd be sitting behind the steering wheels or ripping the dirty cloth upholstery or digging through the glove box. It was always fun. Our game that day was locking each other in the car trunks. Do you remember the story? Locking each other in the car trunks. It was just the kind of play that little kids like. We knew our parents would not let us play it if they knew what we were doing. So of course we did it and didn't tell them. And it was scary being shut up in some old car trunk. Mikey locked me in the dark trunk and it smelled of old oil and dust and travel and what have you. Then he let me out and I would do the same to him. It was wonderful until I couldn't get Mikey out of the car trunk. And the noon whistle blew. Time for lunch, or else the switch. I kept trying to get that old trunk open. Mikey was starting to scream. So I said I'd go get help. But it was time for lunch. And I ran the way back home. Who to ask for help? Not Mom. Maybe I better just go home for lunch and not let anybody know. Which was, you know, the memory of this story. Oh. That's where my story here stops. I, of course, go get his sister, Kay. And Big Fat Kay, who's how I remember her. I have no idea where she is now in the world. Kay helped me get him out of the trunk. I think it wasn't locked. It was just one of those push buttons that got rusted. I could not get him out. And the thing is, in a world where, you know, sometimes we make our decisions so hard, that was a real hard decision for a little kid because my mom absolutely expected us home by noon. She had to count her 10 kids. And for once, I did the right thing back then. And I'm surprised at myself because that's not my way. In the force of all that overwhelming punishment, it would seem that I really would have gone home to lunch and tried to keep my mouth shut about it. And a five-year-old wouldn't think that so much of the repercussions that, of course, they're going to find out you and Mikey did this and that Mikey's now dead or suffocated or whatever. It was just like, I really should have gone home for lunch, but I did the right thing. And so it's so surprising. And again, I'm embarrassed that I'm telling you this story because I did the right thing. And it makes me look up to be the hero, which I usually wasn't.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So in all of this, connecting it to your story, you know, I think somehow people will pull through, but I have no idea how.
And sometimes you're not going to pull through by following the concrete rules that somebody told us how to live our life. You know, and maybe that's the adultness or the emerging of, hey, that's a rule, and it might have worked to hold me true for a while, but now I'm past that, and Mikey is more important than Mom's rule right now, or the church's rule right now, or whoever made up.
Oh, it's the whole explanation of the gray area.
Yeah,
it's not all black and white. That child story helps adults probably a lot. I don't know if it helps you now.
Well, I've also known it's an important story because I can't forget it.
Oh, and it probably comes around again and again and again, and you see it and approach it somewhat differently each time. There's some new kind of framing that you glean from it.
No, we all will. The rest of our lives.
Yeah.
This is a Mikey situation. This is what's expected, but this is what I feel.
And that's a gift. It's a gift you shared with us. So thank you
wonderful.
For the story.
Yes.
And thank each of you for the stories and the images that you have brought from the story that was read today.
So, I shared one more thing.
Yes.
The real insight for me in this session came before we read the story, when we were doing the breathing in and out, which I've done many times in many settings, but have never realized before that as we breathe in the oxygen, we're also breathing in parts of the carbon dioxide that everyone else has just breathed out.
So that connectedness.
So that connectedness, that community, we may want to remove ourselves from it. We may want to say, no, I am alone. I don't have to pay attention to Mikey or whatever. But we can't escape it. Because every time we breathe in, we're breathing out the carbon dioxide from the people all around us. And they from us.
Right. So there is that connection going on that we don't see, but that we are constantly experiencing as a part of this interchange. Well, thank you all. We're going to have to end today, and may the wings of the wind go with you all.
Thank you.
It's so late.